broadcasting from the Unshackled Studios in Melbourne. This is Wilms Front, brought to you by theunshackled.net. Now here's Tim Wilms.
Hello and welcome to this start of week edition of Wilms Front. It is 7 p.m. here in Melbourne on this Monday, the 23rd of November, 2020, when the borders are now open to Victorians, to New South Wales and the ACT. We are live on the Wilms Front YouTube and DLive channel, as well as the enhanced interactive Entropy software. So now both Victoria and South Australia are on the path out of lockdown. Though the economic and psychological damage to residents of both states will continue to be felt for months to come. During every lockdown in Australia, some of the first businesses to be closed and the last to be permitted to reopen by the state for health reasons were gyms and sports facilities. This was also the case with Victoria's second lockdown, and with South Australia's first step towards its so-called three-day circuit breaker lockdown last week, which has thankfully ended. This is despite the fact that regular exercise, which was also banned completely in South Australia during their, for the first day and a half of their lockdown, they weren't even allowed the 1 hour per day of exercise that us Melburnians were allowed during our stage four lockdown. Exercise is, of course, good for people's mental well-being, helps build up your immune system to repel viruses such as the coronavirus, as well as all sorts of other ill health nasties, along, of course, with healthy eating. Many Australians, including myself, have put on weight during this lockdown. Now that Victoria is largely reopened, and we can now travel interstate, there is no excuse for not getting active anymore and working off those lockdown kilos. My first guest for tonight is gym owner and operator Chris Preston to discuss 2020's war on healthy exercise during the coronavirus pandemic and the impact lockdowns have had on the fitness industry and what options are now available to all of us if we want to fight off COVID and other viruses, and what personal fitness and lifestyle advice he can offer. Chris, welcome to the show.
Thanks, mate. Pleasure to be here.
Now, you've been able to be officially reopened for nearly a month now. What's it been like back at the gym? Has there been a rush in new memberships, or is it just the regulars returning?
Yeah, it's been good. We're probably like a lot of gym has a core group. So, you know, your big box gyms might have 1,000 members or 2,000 members, but it's probably like 20% of those that actually turn up and are consistent with their routine. That 20% is always going to come back straight away. And we found that they're the ones that were sort of chomping at the bit to come back. If any of them didn't come back, it was purely due to, you know, loss of income, didn't have their job anymore, didn't have any security, or weren't financially in a position to come back. So we found that because we're a little bit more of a premium with our training. We're not just like a $10 gym membership where you pay for group personal training and coaching with us. So we're a little bit different. But in saying that, you know, we still felt the same statistic across the board. We did see a lot of people not return. But on the flip side of that, we did see a lot of new faces show up, a lot of people that had maybe taken it for granted that, you know, that maybe had fallen off the wagon with the gym here and there, or maybe didn't go because they just sort of couldn't be fucked or whatever. Excuse my French, sorry, I swear a bit when I get passionate. So I'll try and hold back. It's probably been half and half. There's people who have come back, and there's been a lot of newcomers that have probably woken up to the fact that, hey, being isolated and told I can't go to the gym has made me realise how much I actually need it.
And, of course, this is the first day of Melbourne, Victoria, semi-unmasked. You don't have to wear a face mask now when you're outside and can socially distance. Though I was looking at the... Because the Victoria's Department of Health and Human Services has minute details about when you must wear your mask. And they've mentioned still at the gym, even though, of course, most of the time you should be doing strenuous exercise there, which of course, and this is the same thing in hospitality venues, is that when you walk in, you have to have the mask on, but when you're seated at your table, you can take it off, which they want you to do the same at gyms, where if you're not doing strenuous exercise or just walking in and that, keep it on, which of course it has no medical benefit if you're constantly putting it on and taking it back off.
It's interesting about the mask, and it always has been from day one. And there's one thing that I learned very on as a trainer, and it was, if you're in the gym, if you're training by yourself, or even if you're just training a client, the number one rule that you always had was that you never ever touch your eye whilst you're training. Never wipe your face across your eyeballs, because your eyeballs is the first point of contact and the most susceptible point of contact to contract any form of bacteria, either give you the flu or make you crook. And we're not being told to wear goggles.
Well, this is what was the justification for closing gyms during the initial stages of the restrictions, which then became the lockdown back in March this year, is that because gyms have multiple users on equipment, most gyms back in pre-COVID times were 24/7. All members have like a dongle which lets them in after hours. They're unmanned. Their justification for them closing was that, yeah, because all these different people were touching them and people sweat when they exercise, they ooze droplets, that it was just an unsafe environment.
Yeah, it's an interesting comment. Like, it's been proven, and they've even come out and said it, I think it was the World Health put it on their site a long ago, that even in the early days, that it doesn't transmit through sweat. So the whole sweat part has got nothing to do with any of it, because it doesn't make any sense. And like, you don't just sweat out bacteria, you sweat out water, because your body gets hot, so it has to cool itself down. That's what it does. Like, a car has a radiator, it has an outlet. That's just what happens. If it didn't have an outlet, it would get trapped there and you would overheat. So that's got nothing to do with it. So to me, that was strange from the word go. And I mean, I think one of the biggest things as well that I worried about was contact tracing. And yeah, they couldn't even get their own contact tracing right with the hotel quarantine debacle. And, you know, that was one of the main reasons for this second lockdown, which we were probably most pissed off about, was because nothing ever came from a gym. And as far as my knowledge goes, and from what I've heard, I haven't looked 100% deep into this, so don't hold me to it, but I'm still yet to hear about a gym that's had a massive outbreak and had to have all
this. Speculation that Peter Dutton, our Home Affairs Minister, who was diagnosed with coronavirus early in March, that he got it from a Sydney gym, but that was, they never conclusively proved that.
No, that's right. Nothing's been said in stone that, you know, a gym is a place where it spreads. And if it is, it's easy to knock on the head. Like, we have the best contact tracing in any industry. We've had it for years. Even the most basics of gyms would have, at least at a bare minimum, a sign-in sheet at the front desk, time in and a time out. And for a lot of other businesses, they don't even have that. And we've had that for years, let alone like the dongle scanners, like you said, you know, time in, time out, you know, who was there, who was around them, who would have been within an hour. And on top of that, if you go one step further and look at a gym model like ours, where we do proper structured training, I can tell you 3 years ago who was in at what time at 6 o'clock on the 21st of June in fucking 2016. I could tell you the people that were in that session, and I could backtrack to the workouts that we planned for the group, and I could probably tell you what equipment they touched.
The only people who don't seem to remember where they were or what happened on certain days are politicians, especially where they appear before inquiries or royal commissions.
Yeah, it's funny that.
Because you recall that when Dan Andrews began to allow small private home visits, he encouraged people to maintain records of who visited your private residence. And I was just like, yeah, I'm not a politician. I know who's visited my house on certain days.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, with the, I mentioned the dongle system, and most gyms also have CCTV as well. The reason why there is that, well, surveillance is to make sure that people are not, well, stealing gym time by giving the dongle to a friend, which is known to happen. And I know that gyms in their terms of membership, that's a pretty severe violation. So as you said, there's the gyms, they already have these records subject to privacy provisions about who's been there and when.
Yeah, that's right. And it's important for us if something happens in the gym, like equipment breaks or a window gets smashed or a mirror gets cracked because someone's knocked a weight at it, you know, we can easily look back and we can track down to see who it was. A, we can make sure that they're okay. And then B, we can make them liable for what happened.
Now, when the gyms were closed during the first and second wave, one of the four reasons to leave the home were to exercise, which could be a walk or a jog or a bike ride. Though, especially during the second lockdown, Dan Andrews, he hit out of people who, well, he didn't want people to exercise all day or travel long distances to, say, go for a hike or something, because he said this was all about limiting movement. But if you're exercising for what, however many hours in the open air and you're away from people, and say if you're traveling, say, 3 or 4 hours for a hike in the Yarra Ranges, for example, like obviously you're traveling in an enclosed car. So what's the risk there? Was it just that we weren't staying home as much as he wanted us to?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it didn't make sense that you couldn't go for a 1 hour drive and go for a hike up a mountain in the middle of the bush by yourself, but you could go to Bunnings with 1,000 other people, all touch the same hammer and put it back on the shelf, and no one cared.
And then, of course, when the stage four lockdown was implemented in Melbourne, Melbourne residents were limited to 1 hour of exercise per day within 5 kilometres from their place of residence, so kept under house arrest for 23 hours a day. So that severely limited people's ability to just you couldn't get fresh air at that time because unless you were jogging, you had to wear the mask all the time, including up until yesterday. So options to do some decent exercise, well, supervised exercise with a personal trainer, that was banned, but to just get any sort of fresh air, some miles on what it, I've forgotten the name of those watches, watch things that track meters. Fitbits, yes. Yes, that was severely limited for 6 weeks.
Yeah, and like, you know, the biggest thing about all that, and one thing that we all recognize as industry leaders and coaches, was that people, if you had a gym, like I know a lot of people, right, that have home gyms set up at home, and they might use it for a month, and then it's like a cat with the cotton ball. Like it grabs it, makes a mess of it, it plays with it, and then once it unravels, it's like, oh, well, that's that. And what we're finding was people were trying to train at home, they were trying to work from home, they were trying to eat and cook all their meals at home. Some people were trying to school their kids from home, and then they were, on top of that, they were still trying to fit in their workout or their daily steps. So all of a sudden you're confined to, you know, these four walls to try and live your whole life. Yeah, take what you want from it, but at the end of the day, people want communities, and that's what gyms are. Gyms are communities that are around people. There's energy, there's connection, there's relationships. For a lot of us, it's the routine. It's having somewhere to go. The pump up music on the way. When you get there, it's your routine, whether you have a protein shake or whatever it might be. You smash your workout, you say goodnight to a few people, you cool down, then you drive home, good tunes, and you go and eat healthier food because you've exercised. So you naturally want to do good for your body. People that fell off that wagon and fell out of routine probably found that they ate more shit during lockdown than ever. One, of course, you were restricted, convenience, Uber Eats, knock on your door straight away, but there's less drive for people to eat healthy when you're not putting in the work.
There are some people who will have the space and financial resources and are disciplined enough to be able to continue their exercise routine at home. I recall during the lead up to the lockdown, fitness equipment, there was a surge in sales from that. But as I just alluded to before, not everyone has a spare few thousand dollars lying around to purchase, a cross trainer, exercise bike or treadmill or weights.
Yeah. And I mean, like I said, like that's one-fifth of why people go to a gym is for equipment. Every gym's got equipment. And yeah, you'll have limited equipment at home. It's up to you what you make and what you want to do with it. But like I said, people want community. They want to be around people. And you don't want to, yeah, you talk about disciplined people, you're talking about fucking 1% of our population.
Yeah, that's, I think you're right. That's sadly the case. But also there's people such as yourself and I know plenty of them, gym junkies, who need their daily exercise. They just can't be cooped up without any exercise as well. And then, of course, there's the gym owner and operator such as yourself, left without an income for months at a time. And what was it, JobKeeper is no substitute for a regular business.
Yeah, look, some of the grants that they were dishing out were probably really beneficial for some gyms, for small studios. But to give you an example, one of my really close mates, he's got 13 gyms. With that, he didn't get 13 grants. He got one grant. He got the same grant as everyone else for 13 gyms. So his 10K that he got wouldn't have even hit the sides. You know what I mean?
And as one of the people that I know who's a small business advocate, small business people, they don't want money thrown at them for nothing. Yes, like businesses need profits, cash flow to survive, but it's about building something. It's about building, as you said, a community. If you compare them to go across industries to cafes, pubs, like the people who own and operate those, obviously they want to make a profit, but they also love the social aspects of running a cafe or a pub, seeing their regulars. They're very social beings.
Yeah, for sure. And because like that's our sole purpose, you know. Not all of us, but many of us we've come from nothing. You know, we've never had money. We put in the hard yards. And like you said, you know, people saying, oh, you need to give more money to small business. You need to do this for small business, more funding, more JobKeeper, blah, blah, blah. At the end of the day, like, we don't fucking want your money. The last thing we wanted was government handouts. All we wanted to do was just open the doors again. We just wanted to open the doors, get back in the trenches, get back serving people and helping people feel better about themselves, achieve their goals. And especially from a mental health point of view, talk about the gym junkie that didn't have it. and they've had that taken away from them, yeah, they might go there, you look in the mirror, okay, he's quite big, gym junkie, blah, 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 however you want to stereotype that. But, like, for that person mentally, how it makes them feel mentally to actually go somewhere, to switch off 45 minutes, hit that session and leave, is probably what keeps that person sane so they can go home and be happy and not be fucking grumpy because they haven't been able to use their energy and haven't been able to stimulate the endorphins and get the good feel neurons pumping through your body. Like, there's a big, big flow-on effect from this. And I think the one of the things that annoyed me the most was that no one gave us a chance. Gyms were never given a chance. We weren't given a chance to be free from this virus. We weren't given a chance. It was just, okay, shut down. I would have said fair enough if 60, 70% of gyms in Victoria all pushed and spread the virus, but that didn't happen.
And also another industry that was forced to close during stage four, even though there'd been no transmission, was hairdressers.
Same thing.
They were allowed to be open during the first lockdown. There was no outbreaks anywhere at hairdressers. But you sort of got the feeling, especially from the stage four restrictions, that they just closed more things just to make it seem like this is a more serious lockdown.
Yeah, it was interesting. And, like, I've got a theory about it. It's nothing more than a theory. I don't have anything to back it apart from logic and what I know. And, I mean, if you look at council gyms that are obviously local government funded, a lot of governments put a lot of money into these leisure centres to make them look pretty and fit them out with, you know, $2-3 million worth of equipment, like ridiculous size. Nothing compared to, like, the scale of what we do. Like, we're down here in, like, a cost-wise, and a council gym's like up here with the amount of shit they put into it. But they're leeches. They're leeches for the system. They all run at a loss. Every council gym runs at a loss. They all suck money from the government. All their staff are casuals. They're casual workers, so they just got put straight off. They didn't care. But it was the disproportionate response in that respect. Like, you know, an owner-operator gym is completely different than a council gym because you've got people that have a job and rock up and they're just a personal trainer for the council gym, and yeah, they get this massive hourly rate because they're a casual, so they're probably getting like 30, 35 bucks an hour. They work on a Saturday, all of a sudden getting 70 bucks an hour. For us, like, we can't do that shit because it's not viable for our business model. But you know, people that show up for a job, then you've got people that give a fuck, and that's the difference. And you know, we show up to create a community. We show up to create a space where people can feel good and feel like they're a part of something. Whereas, you know, most council gyms run at a massive loss every year. Now you're talking like well within the hundreds of thousands of dollars losses per year. And if you want my theory, gyms were shut to stop that money flying out the door.
I actually haven't heard that before, that theory, but it's an interesting one. But yeah, when it comes to these decisions to just, well, as we know, our political leaders were just making it up as they went along. I don't think they'd be capable of that sort of long-term planning.
Yeah, I don't know. It's the only thing that made sense to me was I know that, you know, their wages are very high. They've got a big bill to foot every week for council gym's wages.
Now, on September the 14th, when the easing of the stage four lockdown began, what are known as outdoor boot camps or outdoor private sessions with a personal trainer were allowed, what was the impact of that? Was that feasible for many personal trainers and instructors? Were they, because it's not something that really many of us had heard was popular.
Yeah, I mean, we kind of had our neck in the noose, right? It was like you could go all out with an outdoor setup because all of a sudden now you're weather affected. So you need some form of protection overhead in case it rained. Obviously, you can't have walls because then that makes you an indoor session and you can't run it. So you could go out and you could put all this stuff together and make a whole new business model But then, like with what's happened within, say, 5-6 weeks later, all of a sudden you can get back in your gym. So for us, it wasn't viable. For the amount of people you could have per session to the amount of people that would actually show up wasn't viable, which is why we just chose to stay online and coach our members online. And we just stuck with that, not putting our neck out too far because, yeah, you can adapt and pivot to all this stuff, but we all had faith in you at the end of the day that it was all just going to just slowly just go away. And that's what we're seeing here in Melbourne. We're starting to see it just sort of fizzle out and go away. How long they keep pushing all this for, I don't know. But I think we all know what the end game with that is and what they want to be the solution for things to get back to normal. But, look, half of the stuff that they came out with was not realistic. Even when we could open and operate in the gym again with 10 people per class, like we run groups of 20 to 28. So you're now asking us to open, but you can only run it, you know, 30, 40%. But my staff will still have to do the same hours. So now I'm still on 30, 40% income potential, and I've still got the same overheads.
Because when at first regional gyms were allowed to open and then Melbourne gyms, it was the one person per 8 square meters, which is that's more than hospitality. It's now with the further easing today, it's back to one person 4 square meter. And as I mentioned, mask rule has been slightly relaxed. So things are a little bit easier today. Are gyms allowed to, in Victoria, allowed to be 24/7 now, or do they always have to have somebody there to be a de facto COVID marshal?
I honestly haven't looked at what the latest legislation is that came through over the weekend, but to my knowledge, it still has to be staffed. And yeah, they were, you know, you got to have your COVID marshal on site during your staffed hours. And for once again, it's a part of our business model that's not viable. And, you know, they want all this cleaning done. They want all this sanitizing done, which is fine. We're happy to do it, but they've got to foot the bill. You want us to do all this shit? They're going to have to foot the bill for it.
We saw when the Melbourne virus went north to New South Wales in June, July, Gladys Berejiklian and the Premier up there, even though she's been the least worst, she still mandated that gyms up there have COVID marshals, which meant they couldn't be 24/7. I think the rule is now that they don't need a COVID marshal if there's less than 20 people, which begs the question, what if 21 people show up at midnight when it's a 24/7 gym? Does a COVID marshal have to rush down or something? What's the go with that?
Yeah, a lot of gyms, I mean, depending on what system you've got that operates your fob tag to swipe in, you can restrict the amount of entries, so you could restrict that to only 20 swipes, so it would only allow 20 people in. As soon as someone buzzes out, it would recognize that and then allow one more person to come back in. I mean, that's how you could automate it, and you could still run with that model if you didn't want to have a COVID marshal between, you know, a select few hours. But for a lot of 24-hour gyms, they're probably not going to have any more than 20 people at once between the hours of, you know, 11 p.m. and probably 4 a.m. There's those hours between that period, which are quite dead. You get the occasional shift worker in, but I mean, there's ways around it, that's for sure. But I still don't know where these numbers come from. I don't know why 20 is different than 21. I don't know why 20 is different than 50. If you're playing by the square meter rule and doing everything else, I don't see why all of a sudden they can just call 20. It's all comes back to, you know, what I said earlier about, you know, the disproportionate response. Like, gyms are different sizes. 20 people is different in my gym than what 20 people looks like in a, you know, a massive Snap Fitness.
Now, we've still got one more step in Victoria's roadmap to reopening, which we're in we began the last step today. The final step is called COVID normal, one of those 2020 globalist terms. So the original roadmap said 28 days without any new cases and no active cases statewide. We're currently at 24 days with no new cases, and we still have one active case in the state who's been in hospital for quite a bit, though Dan Andrews has modified the roadmap to just say when public health advice allows. He said that he's going to announce the COVID normal step on December the 6th. So there is one more opportunity for our benevolent leader to make your business more sustainable and allow more people into the gyms. But they are open. But obviously, as I mentioned, people's ability to get out and exercise has been restricted, which means they've had this routine where they've been stuck at home. And as you were talking about before, routines are, once you're in them, changing out of them is difficult. And exercise, especially strenuous exercise, when you've been lounging around for quite a while, it's quite a shock to the system. The old thing, no pain, no gain. So I'm not sure if people have asked you for advice about how to get out of the lockdown routine, get your body jolted to be active again. I'm asking for myself as well, because well, it was the first day of the unmasked outside. So I went for a 2 to 3 hour unmasked walk, because it's hard to do a fast walk when you've got this mask over you. But I also did some jogging as well, jolt up my system. So you're the expert here. How's the best way to get back into healthy routines?
Yeah, look, a lot of it's going to come from, like you said, a lot of people have picked up some bad habits. We've got to be complacent. Yeah, we do want these things, but now we're at a point where it's like, all right, fuck it, I've got to go and do it. And if you've been sitting around contemplating, there's different phases of motivation that people go through. And there's like contemplation, pre-contemplation. So you go through those phases where you're contemplating whether you should go or not. At the end of the day, like for me, when it comes back to getting routine, it comes down to having a schedule. And you have to have a schedule. Firstly, a lot of people now working from home don't need to get up as early in the morning anymore. They can snooze in for another hour or 2 hours. So you become fucking lazy in the morning. They just hit the snooze alarm, bang, hit snooze again. Straight away, you're building bad habits instantly. That's your first test of self-discipline. If your alarm goes off and you hit snooze, you failed. You really failed the day. That's your time right there. The alarm goes off, you set your alarm for that time, so be accountable to it. And then you need to have a schedule for your day, especially if you're working from home. This is the biggest thing, because everything's sporadic. You've got a bit of freedom, you've got a bit of choice to just sort of get up, go here, go there, duck out for 20 minutes, come back, I'll finish it later. And then the next minute it's 12 o'clock at night and you're trying to finish something which you could have done in like a 2 hour block at home, but you didn't, because you didn't have any accountability, you didn't have any structure, and you didn't have the discipline to follow any of that. So you got to have structure first, which then you need to have the discipline, because structure and discipline equals routine. So there's like your formula. If you don't have structure first, you don't have anything. So if you have to the hour or to the half hour, like what you're going to do every day, you don't have to do this every day. You might do this for like 2 or 3 weeks and build the routine. And you can have structure. You can have everything laid out on paper. It can look nice and pretty. It can look easy and nice and achievable. But if you don't have the discipline to follow the structure, that's where you fail. So you have to have your structure, and then you have to have the discipline to stick to it. It's like 10 o'clock, I'm meant to be here. Shit, okay, I better go do that now. 10:30. I'm supposed to be doing my warm-up right now and going for a 30-minute walk before I start a 45-minute session. But 10:30 hits the clock, bang, I'm there, I'm out the door. Like, have that structure in place, have the discipline to follow the structure, that's going to create routine, and then that gives you freedom. You don't have this anxiety, you don't have this panic, like, fuck, what have I got to do? Oh, I forgot to do this, I forgot to do that. Like, that's what breeds a bad habit and a bad routine, is because we're in that fight or flight all the time. And then you get used to it. And then we reach for bad things because we feel like we failed. We start the self-loathing, oh, I'm fucking lazy, I'm fucking fat, whatever bullshit people are going to say to themselves. Now is the time to turn it around, get yourself the structure, be disciplined, start building yourself back up again, be positive to yourself, because you're not the only one that's put on weight, you're not the only one that's feeling unhealthy and unfit right now. You know, you're looking at 95% of the population. I tell you right now, my average weight increase from my clients at the gym has been 5 to 8 kilos. Some people have put on more. So if you're worried that you've put on weight, what are you worried for? Everyone's in the same basket. We're all in the same boat. It's what you do. It doesn't matter what's done and what's happened. But all that really matters and what defines you is what you do and how you overcome it. Structure, discipline, routine equals freedom.
And if you're just sort of worried about, it's a hard adjustment to go from just being stuck at home to a strenuous exercise. Just even if you just get out and about, because everything is open now, there's no travel limits. Pretty much everything is open, albeit with some limits. Like, get out and like, don't just go out because Dan said so now, but pre-COVID, we all took these freedoms for granted, the fact that we could be adventurous, and we certainly need to do that again. If you were sort of a just stay at home person pre-COVID, don't be like that again.
Yeah, that's it. I think if you're somewhat stuck and feeling like you have fallen into a rut because of what's happened, write yourself a list of what you did pre-COVID. Write down what that looks like. Write yourself a list tomorrow from start to finish of what you do during the day and compare the pair. Find what you're missing, find what you're lacking, and then just implement one thing at a time. Like, a lot of us can get overwhelmed when we haven't got everything right, and then it seems like it's such a chore to get back to do it. It's like, oh, if you're a meal prepper, I haven't done my meal prep today. If you get up and go for a walk every morning and you've stopped doing that because now you're sleeping in, that's another thing. If you don't have a proper sleep schedule, so if you're not setting a time where you actually go to bed every night to get a full, like, 8 hours sleep, and then you know that if you go to bed at that time, sleep and your alarm goes off, that you've hit that target, like, that's another thing. So for me, like, when I coach a client, I'm looking at what your daily steps are. I want to know how many steps you're doing a day. 10,000 is a bit of bullshit. You only really need to do 7,200. That's studied. We push our clients to do 8,000 minimum. So we go 8,000 steps a day. We look at sleep quality. I want to know how well you sleep and how long that you sleep for. So how many hours you slept and what was your sleep quality like, rated out of 10, right? So sleep and steps come first. So we get them down pat. Then we look at nutrition. Then we look at what you're eating, because if you're sleep deprived, that affects what you eat. If you're tired, you're probably going to eat more shit, because you want that sugar hit, so you reach for something quick and fast, nice and easy. So it's like a compound. So we look at sleep, steps, nutrition, and then what your workout is and what your training's like. And they're like sort of like the four pillars that we look at. So they're the things that I would recommend that you look at if you are in a rut. It's looking at what was my routine pre-COVID, and what am I missing now? And implement one thing at a time. Set yourself a small goal. And you do one task a week and build on that. And then within like a 4 or 5 week period, you know, you might find yourself well and truly back on your feet. But a lot of us get overwhelmed thinking that we have to just go bang and just go all out back into absolutely everything. And that can be overwhelming and can further put you off and create some form like a mild anxiety and overwhelm.
Now, as you said, every gym is different. There's different options. for people when they join a gym. If most 24/7 gym memberships, they can cost around 15 to 20 per week. A lot of gyms that I've been to, they write you a complimentary program when you join, but there's also for an additional fee, the group fitness classes and also one-on-one personal training, because it's also good to have somebody bark at you to push you further, so you are more capable of pushing yourself, building your strength. And then there's also what's increased in popularity is the MMA training gyms.
Yeah, I mean, interesting point there, and something that I did miss, talking about getting back on track. Like, book yourself a PT. Book yourself one PT a week. Maybe pay for 10 sessions up front, or get yourself on some form of contract. Like, commit yourself. Get committed. And then you have accountability, because if you don't show up, then you let the trainer down. So that's going to help you build some accountability. It's going to breed discipline. You might only do like 4-6 weeks of that, one or two sessions a week. Before you know it, you'll be back in your own routine.
And you will feel both physically and mentally better, because I've done what I've just described in the past many years ago, both a combination of a gym routine and personal training. I lost 25 kilos, but obviously due to circumstances, I'm one of those people that's let it by the wayside, but I know that I'm capable of it, and yeah, I want to do it again. And yeah, no more excuses now for anybody.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you never get anywhere if you're just going to keep looking back in the rearview mirror. Like, if you look in the rearview mirror for too long, you're going to crash. And you need to just keep looking forward. You, perfect example is yourself. You've done it. All you have to do is do it again. Mm. And that's life. Life is, it's full of challenges. And if we weren't challenged every day, it would be quite boring, because we wouldn't really learn anything. We would just show up. And if you won everything that you did and everything was easy, you wouldn't really have any resistance to push back at you to fight harder, to learn more, to overcome, to be a better person, be a better leader. And maybe for some of us, we need to do a bit of self-reflection, look back, okay, this is where I am right now, and be completely transparent and honest with yourself. How are you feeling? What's going on? How are you feeling mentally, physically, emotionally? Write that down. Do a paragraph for each thing, and then write down where you want to be. Get that down clear on paper. Where you are now, where you want to be, look at it, and then have another column. Okay, what do I have to do? And then from that point on, you can list like three things for each paragraph of like what I have to do each day to achieve of this person, of where I want to be in maybe 6 months, 12 months, 3 months. Set yourself a bit of a time frame and just give yourself something to work towards. Like, it is a good time now for some self-reflection, to really look back and assess, like, what are the things that we did take for granted? What did we miss? And what is important for us, not only for our physical health, but, you know, mental health. Well, a lot of us go to the gym only because it feels good. And that is why we show up every day. We do things that feel good. If you do something that doesn't feel good, you don't go back for round two. Maybe you went on a date, didn't feel right, you didn't go back. You went on one date, a week later with someone else, felt good, went on another day. Like, that's just how we operate as humans. We do things that feel good. And going to the gym, for a lot of us, feels good. Whether you walk on the treadmill for half an hour and get a bit of a sweat up and feel like you've achieved and you felt good, great, well done. That's all you had to do. Doesn't matter what anyone else thinks about that person that walked on the treadmill for 45 minutes. No one's sitting there going, well, look at that person on the treadmill. That's just your head, your own thoughts saying that, probably because you've said it before, because you've judged someone. So if we stop judging other people, we will be less likely to have that negative mindset that people are judging us.
And if you want to help yourself fight off COVID or any future viruses or the other ones that are still floating around, like the regular flu, being physically fit gives you a stronger immune system, because if you've been properly paying attention to who's actually at risk from serious long-term effects or death from coronavirus, it's those who elderly, vulnerable, or with comorbidities.
Yeah, for sure. And like, you could easily just look at your close circle of friends, look around them, look at, okay, who's always sick? I've always got that friend that's always crook, right? There's always someone that's always got the flu. Look at what they do. 9 times out of 10, that person probably isn't a regular gym goer, probably doesn't keep themselves, too fit. And you look at the people that have, you know, thrived through this. We look back through history. We look at other sorts of flus and pandemics. And it's like, the strong survive. And we said that in business as well. And, you know, the weak don't make it. And it's a really, really harsh reality. But, you know, the strong do survive and push through. And if you've gotten through this far, like, man, just keep pushing.
I put up a question from one of my regulars, Anita, who asked, do you have advice for an elderly lady with arthritic knees and nerve damaged feet who's putting on weight despite walking her grandkids back and forth to school 2 or 3 times a day? I know that this is just a question in the comments, but do you have any basic recommendations?
Yeah, it's really, really hard. Like, I used to be that trainer that thought that I could just like bang and fix everyone like that. But you know, the more I grew and the more I learned, the more I realized that everybody is super unique and I have to get a better understanding of your position and, you know, what it actually looks like and what you're actually limited to doing. But I would say, like, if you're doing 2 to 3 walks per week, I'd say that's great. Keep it going. Maybe aim for like 5 days a week next week, see how that feels, see if your body responds well to that with your foot, and make that just one component of what you do, right? Like I said earlier on in this podcast, was we look at daily steps, we look at your sleep quality, we look at nutrition, and we also look at your workouts. So there's 4 pillars there. Without knowing your nutrition history, without knowing your sleep quality and how well you sleep, all I know is that you're walking 2 to 3 times a week. And is that 2-3 days a week enough for you to do 8,000 steps per day for the week? So without trying to lose you too much, if we're aiming for 8,000 steps a day over the course of 7 days for a full week, that's 56,000 steps in 1 week. So you don't have to do 8,000 steps per day. You just need to do 56,000 per week. If you're achieving that in the 2 to 3 days, great. If you're not, look at ways that you can increase that. And if you're not finding any change there, I would say there's probably 2 things. Nutrition, you may be eating slightly too many calories above your metabolic baseline with your energy expenditure attached to that. What that means is, like a car, right? If you put too much fuel in the car, it's going to pour out the cap. But if we put just enough in to keep going, it's got something to burn. So eat too much, put on weight. Eat too much, move less, put on more weight. So the last thing I'll be looking at is some form of intense workouts. I know, so in the elderly bracket, intensity can be tricky, but there are some really good, I would honestly get into like some group stuff, try and find like a group aerobics, like in the swimming pool, really good, if they're open. Maybe some like Tai Chi is really good on the joints, and even just going to the gym using like the machines. So we're looking at, you know, preventing osteoporosis. So strength training is proven time and time again to reverse that, good for bone health, good for your joints. So maybe just look at just adding some resistance to your body in some way. You don't need to go hammer and tong. Like, from what you're doing, you just need to build on it. Just do a little bit more than what you're doing if your body allows you to. I hope that helps.
Yeah, I hope Anita found that useful. Well, I've appreciated you, Chris, coming on tonight. I hope that... Well, I'm glad that you and your clientele are able to get back to it now, and hope that there's a speedy recovery for your industry, and also a speedy recovery for those who are motivated enough to get their fitness back after many months cooped up.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. It's a pleasure to be on here and answer a few questions for the guys. If anyone else has any other questions, feel free to shoot them across. I can help you out in any way I can.
Excellent. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
All right, now we'll move on to the South Australian lockdown, even though thankfully the madness of it was cut short after 3 days. It was the most draconian extreme lockdown seen in Australia, with takeaway closed and for a day and a half, exercise and walking the dog was completely banned. This was all over a cluster of which now stands at 27 cases from a hotel quarantine breach that was first announced last Sunday night, so not this Sunday, back on Sunday the 15th. Premier Stephen Marshall and their Chief Public Health Officer, Professor Nicola Spurrier, told the South Australian public this so-called circuit breaker lockdown was necessary because this hotel quarantine breach, it was a new super strain of the virus that spread quickly and showed up in people asymptomatically. But as we found out, this hypothesis was not based on medical science or genomic testing or tracing, but based on incorrect information provided to them by a Woodfield pizza bar worker who tested positive for COVID, who initially told contact tracers he only picked up a pizza from there when he actually worked there. Now, one of the people caught up in this lockdown madness, despite the fact he lives and works nowhere near Adelaide, but is a South Australian resident, so had to suffer through this lunacy, is Peter Manuel, director of Flag Australia, and joins me tonight, a free man again. Peter, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, Tim. This madness has got to stop, and thanks for the chat. Look, to be quite honest, this Chinese virus out of Wuhan, as far as I'm concerned, is shut down the world. And I think the certain elite have been wanting to control the people for a long, long time, and they've been working out ways to do it. And I thought it was going to be through the environmental movement, but that wasn't working quick enough. So this virus has come out, and hell, it's made a hell of a difference to our lives. And they'd be sitting back clapping, thinking, well, we've controlled the people. I don't fall for this crap. I really don't. And the reason I say crap is I'm not saying that we don't have to look after the vulnerable, you know, the old and the sick and so forth, but we do not have to have lockdowns like they've locked this country down or locked the world down. And when I talk about inconsistencies, I mean things like you mentioned about walking the dog. Well, in actual fact, you're right, you couldn't walk your dog, but if you were going to the supermarket, you could take your dog for a walk. So it's fine to go to the supermarket and take your dog, so you're not going to spread the virus. Load of rubbish that is. I was talking to a guy the other day, and him and his mate a few months ago was at the football, and this was just an amateur game, and they were in the outer, and Kim was standing up drinking a beer. His mate was drinking a can of Coke next to him. The marshal came up and told Kim, who was drinking the beer, to sit down. But his mate, who was drinking the soft drink, the can of Coke, could still stand up. So not only this virus is a very, very intelligent virus. If you're drinking alcohol and you're sitting down, you seem to be all right, you stand up and drink it, you might get it. I mean, and people believe this garbage. In the second lockdown in South Australia, my daughter had a hairdressing salon. She could still open her salon and do hair. Now, that's in a very small, enclosed environment, touching people, and that was fine. And we had other places that were locked down. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. So if it was consistent, I wouldn't mind. But the inconsistencies with all this is garbage, absolute garbage. And at the moment with this lockdown, you know, the panic, all of a sudden, bang, we're going to shut down takeaway and all the rest of it. But Coles and Woolies are still open and people absolutely scrambled to the supermarkets everywhere, mixing together and so forth, We had a little bakery here in the hometown of Strathalbyn. That wasn't open, so the poor elderly that don't cook for themselves couldn't go in and get a hot pie or pasty or anything like that. The madness continues, Tim, and I think it's very, very sad that they've really conned people, and I might get a bit of flack over this. I don't care, because in years to come, people actually wake up. And they talk about a vaccine. Well, these vaccines are coming out pretty quick. We haven't got one for SARS. We haven't got one for AIDS. But SARS, where's that? That seemed to have gone. And these vaccines, well, how long are they going to last in the body? Allegedly, I hear that they might only last for a few months. So what, are we going to get jabbed again and then jabbed again with all this stuff? I don't agree with it, Tim, and I think we've got to be very, very careful. And lockdowns destroy too many lives, too many mental health issues, too many small businesses go to the wall. Suicides, you imagine if we were bombarded by the amount of suicide since these lockdowns. Anything the mainstream media is bombarding us with 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, I get very, very worried about. There's an agenda here, and the agenda is about control. Tim.
Well, we in Melbourne and the rest of Victoria have been suffering under these lockdowns for the past 4 months. If I do my math right, yeah, four months. We've had the mask mandate slightly relaxed, and the border open with New South Wales and the ACT. The most hilarious thing is that between the border, between our two states, Victoria and South Australia, there's a hard border on both sides, because your Premier Stephen Marshall, even though he's a Liberal, he was going for the elimination strategy, shut off the border to us diseased Victorians, which he initially said wasn't going to be open until December 1, despite the fact we are now 24 days without a new coronavirus case. And in response to the outbreak in your state, the cluster of 27 cases now, our state Premier Dan Andrews enacted a hard border with South Australia. So both of our state leaders think the other one is diseased. And of course, it's those border communities between Victoria and South Australia that suffer from this madness. They thought they were on the path to having that border reopening. Apparently, according to your Premier and Police Commissioner, Grant Stevens, that border is still scheduled to open on the South Australian side on December 1. But your state government has been pretty heartless and cruel with the border closures to those border communities.
You mentioned Liberal, Stephen Marshall, Liberal. Do you know what lino means, Tim?
Liberal in name only.
Correct, and that's what we've got, Liberal in name only. I think the power's gone to their heads with all this, with your mate over there, Daniel Andrews, and Stephen Marsh. They get on there day in and day out and hit us with all this garbage. Every time we have a breakout, are we going to have a lockdown? How are these small businesses ever going to survive with continued lockdowns? You can't. We've got to get over this. We've got to get back to normality. Yes, as I said before, look after the vulnerable and the sick and so forth. But if we have a look at the flu jab, you know, my two eldest grandchildren had a flu jab weeks and weeks and weeks ago. They've both come down with influenza A. So, you know, I really worry about anybody that's pushing vaccine in regards to this Chinese virus or flu. I haven't had a flu vaccine. If you've had one, good on you. You're not going to be the one to supposedly get it. I'm going to be the one at fault, so I'm going to take that risk. But I just think, as I said earlier, there's an agenda here to control us. And as far as I'm concerned, there's more damage being done with lockdowns than the actual virus. If we have a look back in 2017 with influenza, there was 250,000 cases. There was 1,163 people died. Did we have lockdowns? No, we didn't. Was it bombarded day in, day out over the radio and the television? No, it wasn't. So there's an agenda here, and I think people are going to wake up as time goes on. With the mask situation, I was in Woolworths on Wednesday, and I didn't have a mask on, and I walked in, and everybody there had a mask on, and they were looking at me. And I did what I did, got a little bit of shopping, and went out and went to my ute. And there was a van pulled up with three blokes, and they come out and they said, where's your mask, mate? I said, you don't have to wear one. Oh, yes, you do. I said, no, you don't. Look on Stephen Marshall's website. You should wear a mask. That doesn't mean you must. You should wear a mask. I said, I've been on to Dan Cregan's office, the member for Cavill for the Liberal Party. Not mandatory. I've rung the police. Not mandatory. So what did they do? Took off their masks. So I'm not saying that, you know, I'm defying the law or anything like that. I did what I was allowed to do, didn't have to wear a mask. But, you know, why should we be wearing these damn things out in the fresh air? There's nothing better than getting that fresh air into your lungs, and this is a lung disease, when we're stuck home in closed doors, stale in that stale air all the time. I think it's going to do more harm than good. So, yeah, Tim, you know my feelings on it. I think we've just got to open the place up and let's get back to normality, stop bombarding it on the radio and television, and people just might go about their normal lives. I don't know anybody with it. I don't know anybody that's anywhere that knows somebody with it. So, yeah, unreal.
Even though, well, today was the first day of the easing of the mask mandate, when you're outdoors, you don't have to wear it, there was still plenty of zombies, as they're referred to, walking around in the open fresh air alone, still wearing the mask, depriving themselves of oxygen, breathing in their own bacteria. And that's similar to the story that you just told, where those guys didn't know that masks weren't mandatory in South Australia. And obviously here during the second wave, we had more community transmission here. So I know a few people who did contract the coronavirus, but they've made a full recovery. They just felt felt like they had the flu for several days. They haven't had, as the fear merchants have said, their internal organs haven't been crippled permanently. It hasn't turned them into pro-lockdown advocates. They've just thought, well, we're shutting down society for this. And you mentioned the last two flu seasons, or should I say the last two bad flu seasons, 2017, when 1,100 Australians died. Last in 2019 flu season, 900 died. I and a few of my colleagues, we got the flu as well, because it was a bad flu season. It was pretty horrible, but because we're young, we recovered, but it was still horrible. Yet we didn't shut down that winter. And this what's happened in your state, based on a small cluster of asymptomatic people, and your premier and your chief public health officer and police commissioner reacted with this, well, they called it a circuit breaker, only 6-day lockdown, but you weren't to know that it was not going to last only that long. Thankfully, it was cut short.
Yeah, Tim, look, I'm sorry, I couldn't hear that. It's very shaky and all the rest of it. I don't know if you can hear me, but I really couldn't hear any of that. I'm sorry. I don't know whether it's my end or your end.
Oh, it's definitely your end. Well, you're out in the rural area, so your internet's a bit... you can hear me now?
Yeah. I couldn't really hear a great deal. I know I just heard a bit about the rural end. But maybe we end this a bit shorter because I'm finding it difficult to hear you. But at the end, hang on, I've got you back again. Go for it.
Okay. Now let's. I was talking before about that. Well, to say your authority.
No, you've gone, Jake. Yeah, I've got you. Go on, Tim.
To say that your authority is overreacted is an understatement. This new outbreak from hotel quarantine was announced last Sunday evening on the 15th.
No, Tim, I'm sorry.
All right. We might have to try again another time.
Yeah, no, look, I'm sorry about that, Tim. It's just cutting in and out. And I really want to listen to what you've got to say so I can respond. But you know my feelings, and I look forward to talking to you again. But lockdowns are not the answer. They're making poor people even poorer. But thanks for the opportunity.
Thank you. Take care, and hopefully you stay free and your premier is a bit more rational in future, though I wouldn't take that to the bank. All right, had to cut it short there with Peter, but it was good to get his reaction to having that extreme lockdown there thankfully it was only 3 days, but they've been living under a regime of COVID normal since they'd eliminated the virus. But as you heard Peter say there, you weren't allowed to stand up and have an alcoholic beverage in hospitality venues. You could only sit down. I'm not sure why standing up and drinking alcohol is more dangerous than sitting down and drinking alcohol. It's like how singing and dancing has been severely restricted in South Australia, but elsewhere as well, particularly at weddings. Now, of course, the Premier Stephen Marshall, Chief Public Health Officer Nicholas Ferrier, and Police Commissioner Grant Stevens, they blamed their overreaction on the misinformation they got from a Woodfield pizza bar worker, which I dubbed Pizzagate South Australia. And this was one of the memes going around: two guys, a girl, and a pizza place there. And of course, there's a bit of crossover there with the one of my favorite programs, Fat Pizza, there, because I put it in my summary here. There was an episode of Fat Pizza way back in 2003 called Quarantine Pizza, where Bobo, who's the stingy pizza chef, the chickens that he uses for the pizzas are believed to have been infected with SARS, because that was the virus of concern back there as well. Apparently there is still an ongoing police investigation to see whether they can charge the Woodfield pizza worker for lying to them. Of course, he didn't lie for no reason. We now know that he is a 36-year-old Spanish national who's on a student graduate visa, so most likely was working illegally in breach of his visa conditions, which is why he didn't want to tell contact tracers. He's not the first person to not tell the truth to contact tracers for fear of getting into trouble on an unrelated matter here. But of course, the authorities and the media have tried to blame the pizza guy for plunging the state into lockdown, even though it was the decision of the Premier Show and Police Commissioner. Nicholas Ferrier today, she defended her decision based on the information that she had. She apparently had already whipped out her own modelling and supercomputer, which said that if the extreme lockdown wasn't taken, then the state would have a 99% chance of a second wave. I highly doubt that supercomputer modelling is accurate. Here in Victoria, we've had our own supercomputer telling Dan the roadmap to reopening. And of course, when it comes to climate alarmism, that's all been based on supercomputer modeling. Now, of course, knee-jerk, extreme, draconian, panicked lockdown, of course, has had a devastating impact on business confidence, certainty, tourism in South Australia and also Australia-wide as well, given that immediately after the outbreak, Northern Territory, Tasmania, Queensland and WA closed their borders to South Australia, and so did Victoria. Thankfully, the Northern Territory has reopened them today. But yes, as Peter said, is this going to be every time that there's an outbreak in these eliminationist states, the only state government which is practicing suppressing outbreaks and has successfully done so is New South Wales, which is the only state of Australia which is open to all other states and territories and New Zealand at the moment. They welcomed us Victorians back last night. This is going to have a ongoing uncertainty factor with people hesitant to make big plans, holiday plans, wedding plans. So it is quite a serious matter. But again, you have to laugh about the fact that the South Australian government shut down the state based on the fact that they thought that this was a super strain of the virus being transmitted by pizza boxes based on what one pizza guy told them. And so there was this hilarious, you would say, public sketch filmed out the front of the Woodfield Pizza Place in front of a 7 News cross the other day, which I'll just play for you now.
Can't believe we've reopened already. Unbelievable. They got me working overtime. Sorry to interrupt, guys. Did you order the pepperoni COVID thin crust? Was that you guys?
Can you get out of
that? Wasn't you guys?
Sorry. Get out of our
shop. I know I'm 3 days early. I know I'm 3 days early, but I thought it was you guys. Hang on, I'll double check. Hang on, I've got receipts. Wait up.
Absolutely, it is Rosa. But he has said that the 36-year-old Spanish national who lied about his job here at the pizza bar risked the local community. Well, he said it's absolutely ridiculous. And he said he's simply not going to do that to repatriated South Australians. But at 6 o'clock, we'll tell you the breakdown and how many of them are from interstate. And it might surprise you.
Sorry, what's the problem?
Pizza behind us. If you think that's your idea of a joke,
did you order the pandemic pizza? Was that you?
I think that was funny.
It's a delicious pizza. We've got jalapenos. We've got it's a meat lovers. It's a meat lovers. Can you keep this quiet? Did you order the from Woodville?
No.
Woodville Pizza Bar.
No.
This isn't yours.
No.
Not the COVID special.
No.
Come on, you didn't order pizza. Come on. Sorry, I'm 10 minutes late. Did you order the COVID-19 special?
Is that
you?
Did. Yes,
yeah. Sorry, I'm 3 days early.
Yeah.
You can go now. Yeah. Yeah, stay safe. Oh, where's your face mask?
A typical mainstream media news reporter diva getting all triggered that a live cross was ruined by a bit of a joke. That was absolutely hilarious. I don't know who that guy is, but that was bloody hilarious. Of course, you do need humour to get you through such absurdities. So that wraps up this start of week edition of Wilmsfront for this Monday. And now I did promote that there would be a Trad-Tasman talk Tuesday night special tomorrow night because missed out on last Friday night's regular show. But due to Dua having another commitment, we're just going to skip a program for this week entirely and just go back to Fridays at 6 p.m. Melbourne time on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channel, which means there'll be no show of any sort tomorrow night, but Wilmsfront will be back for its regular midweek edition on YouTube and DLive Wednesday, 7 p.m. Melbourne time, and then, of course, the weekly Uncuckables, 8:30 p.m. Melbourne time on the show's YouTube and DLive. And I'm certainly going to take the opportunity, as I did during the brief reopening window between Melbourne's first and second wave. I'm going to New South Wales next weekend to have the experience and freedom of going to another state, which should always be our constitutional right as Australians. We don't know whether Australia really exists anymore, given that we're sort of being run by 8 different state warlord premiers at the moment, and a prime minister is in Scott Morrison, who is too cucked to actually stand up to these premiers and stand up for the constitution as well. But that's it for tonight. Thank you so much for watching, and I'll see you on Wednesday.
Thanks for tuning in to Wilmsfront. Visit timwilms.com or Rational Rise TV to view the archive of episodes. And keep visiting theunshackled.net to view all our shows. And to keep up with the latest real news and analysis.